Jesus established his church and maintained his mission on a spiritual foundation of Christ's healing. He taught his followers that his religion had a divine principle which would cast out error and heal both the sick and the sinning. He claimed no intelligence, action, nor life separate from God. Despite the persecution this brought upon him, he used his divine power to save men both bodily and spiritually. The question then, as now, was, how did Jesus heal the sick? His answer to this question the world rejected. He appealed to his students, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" That is, who or what is it that is thus identified with casting out evils and healing the sick? They replied, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." These prophets were considered dead, and this reply may indicate that some of the people believed that Jesus was a medium controlled by the spirit of John or of Elias. This ghostly fancy was repeated by Herod himself, that a wicked king and debauched husband should have no high appreciation of divine signs and the great work of the Master was not surprising. For how could such a sinner comprehend what the disciple did not fully understand? But even Herod doubted if Jesus was controlled by the sainted preacher. Hence Herod's assertion, "John have I beheaded, but who is this?" No wonder Herod desired to see the new teacher. The disciples apprehended their master better than did others, but they did not comprehend all that he said and did, or they would not have questioned him so often. Jesus patiently persisted in teaching and demonstrating the truth of being. His students saw this power of truth heal the sick, cast out evil, raise the dead, but the ultimate of this wonderful work was not spiritually discerned even by them until after the crucifixion, when their immaculate teacher stood before them, the victor over sickness, sin, disease, death, and the grave. Yearning to be understood, the Master repeated, "But whom say ye that I am?" This renewed inquiry meant, who or what is it that is able to do the work so mysterious to the popular mind? In his rejection of the answer already given and his renewal of the question, it is plain that Jesus completely eschewed the narrow opinion implied in the citation of the common report about him. With his usual impetuosity, Simon replied for his brethren, and his replies set forth a great fact. "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." That is, the Messiah is what thou hast declared, Christ, the Spirit of God, of truth, life, and love, which heals mentally. This assertion elicited from Jesus the benediction, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven, that is love, hath shown thee the way of life." Before this, the impetuous disciple had been called only by his common names Simon Bar-Jonah, or son of Jonah. But now the Master gave him a spiritual name in these words, "And I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock," the meaning of the Greek word Petros, or stone, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell," Hades, the underworld, or the grave, "shall not prevail against it." In other words, Jesus purposed founding his society not on the personal Peter as a mortal, but on the God power which lay behind Peter's confession of the true Messiah. It was now evident to Peter that divine life, truth, and love, and not a human personality, was the healer of the sick and a rock, a firm foundation in the realm of harmony. On this spiritually scientific basis, Jesus explained his cures, which appeared miraculous to outsiders. He showed that diseases were cast out neither by corporeality, by materia medica, nor by hygiene, but by the divine spirit, casting out the errors of mortal mind. The supremacy of spirit was the foundation on which Jesus built. His sublime summary points to the religion of love. Jesus established in the Christian era the precedent for all Christianity, theology, and healing. Christians are under as direct orders now as they were then to be Christ-like, to possess the Christ spirit, to follow the Christ example, and to heal the sick as well as the sinning. It is easier for Christianity to cast out sickness than sin, for the sick are more willing to part with pain than are sinners to give up the sinful so-called pleasure of the senses. The Christian can prove this today as readily as it was proved centuries ago. Our Master said to every follower, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Heal the sick. Love thy neighbor as thyself." It was this theology of Jesus which healed the sick and the sinning. It is his theology in this book and the spiritual meaning of this theology which heals the sick and causes the wicked to forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. It was our Master's theology which the impious sought to destroy. From beginning to end, the scriptures are full of accounts of the triumph of spirit, mind over matter. Moses proved the power of mind by what men called miracles. So did Joshua, Elijah, and Elisha. The Christian era was ushered in with signs and wonders. Reforms have commonly been attended with bloodshed and persecution, even when the end has been brightness and peace. But the present new, yet old reform in religious faith will teach men patiently and wisely to stem the tide of sectarian bitterness whenever it flows inward. The decisions by vote of church councils as to what should and should not be considered holy writ, the manifest mistakes in the ancient versions, the 30,000 different readings in the Old Testament, and the 300,000 in the New, these facts show how a mortal and material sense stole into the divine record, with its own hue darkening to some extent the inspired pages. But mistakes could neither wholly obscure the divine signs of the scriptures seen from Genesis to Revelation, mar the demonstration of Jesus, nor annul the healing by the prophets who foresaw that the stone which the builders rejected would become the head of the corner. Atheism, pantheism, theosophy, and agnosticism are opposed to Christian science as they are to ordinary religion. But it does not follow that the profane or atheistic invalid cannot be healed by Christian science. The moral condition of such a man demands the remedy of truth more than it is needed in most cases, and science is more than usually effectual in the treatment of moral ailments. That God is a corporeal being, nobody can truly affirm. The Bible represents him as saying, "Thou canst not see my face, for there shall no man see me and live." not materially but spiritually, we know him as divine mind, as life, truth, and love. We shall obey and adore in proportion as we apprehend the divine nature and love him understandingly, worrying no more over the corporeality, but rejoicing in the affluence of our God. Religion will then be of the heart and not of the head. Mankind will no longer be tyrannical and proscriptive from lack of love, straining out gnats and swallowing camels. We worship spiritually only as we cease to worship materially. Spiritual devoutness is the soul of Christianity. Worshipping through the medium of matter is paganism. Judaic and other rituals are but types and shadows of true worship. The true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. The Jewish tribal Jehovah was a man-projected God, liable to wrath, repentance, and human changeableness. The Christian Science God is universal, eternal, divine love, which changeth not and causeth no evil, disease, nor death. It is indeed mournfully true that the older scripture is reversed. In the beginning God created man in his, God's image. But mortals would procreate man and make God in their own human image. What is the God of a mortal, but a mortal magnified? This indicates the distance between the theological and ritualistic religion of the ages and the truth preached by Jesus. More than profession is requisite for Christian demonstration. Few understand or adhere to Jesus' divine precepts for living and healing. Why? Because his precepts require the disciple to cut off the right hand and pluck out the right eye, that is, to set aside even the most cherished beliefs and practices, to leave all for Christ. All revelation, such is the popular thought, must come from the schools and along the line of scholarly and ecclesiastical descent, as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty. In healing the sick and sinning, Jesus elaborated the fact that the healing effect followed the understanding of the divine principle and of the Christ Spirit, which governed the corporeal Jesus. For this principle, there is no dynasty, no ecclesiastical monopoly. Its only crowned head is immortal sovereignty. Its only priest is the spiritualized man. The Bible declares that all believers are made kings and priests unto God. The outsiders did not then, and do not now, understand this ruling of the Christ. Therefore, they cannot demonstrate God's healing power. Neither can this manifestation of Christ be comprehended until its divine principle is scientifically understood. The adoption of scientific religion and of divine healing will ameliorate sin, sickness, and death. Let our pulpits do justice to Christian Science. Let it have fair representation by the press. Give to it the place in our institutions of learning now occupied by scholastic theology and physiology, and it will eradicate sickness and sin in less time than the old systems devised for subduing them have required for self-establishment and propagation. Anciently, the followers of Christ, or truth, measured Christianity by its power over sickness, sin, and death. But modern religions generally omit all but one of these powers, the power over sin. We must seek the undivided garment, the whole Christ, as our first proof of Christianity, for Christ's truth alone can furnish us with absolute evidence. If the soft palm, upturned to a lordly salary and architectural skill, making dome and spire tremulous with beauty, turn the poor and the stranger from the gate, they at the same time shut the door on progress. In vain do the manger and the cross tell their story to pride and fustian. Sensuality palsies the right hand and causes the left to let go its grasp on the divine. As in Jesus' time, so today, tyranny and pride need to be whipped out of the temple and humility and divine science to be welcomed in. The strong cords of scientific demonstration, as twisted and wielded by Jesus, are still needed to purge the temples of their vain traffic in worldly worship and to make them meet dwelling places for the Most High. Medicine. Which was first, mind or medicine? If mind was first and self-existent, then mind, not matter, must have been the first medicine. God being all in all, he made medicine, but that medicine was mind. It could not have been matter, which departs from the nature and character of mind, God. Truth is God's remedy for error of every kind, and truth destroys only what is untrue. Hence the fact that today as yesterday, Christ casts out evils and heals the sick. It is plain that God does not employ drugs or hygiene, nor provide them for human use, else Jesus would have recommended and employed them in his healing. The sick are more deplorably lost than the sinning, if the sick cannot rely on God for help, and the sinning can. The divine mind never called matter medicine, and matter required a material and human belief before it could be considered as medicine. Sometimes the human mind uses one error to medicine another. Driven to choose between two difficulties, the human mind takes the lesser to relieve the greater. On this basis, it saves from starvation by theft and quiets pain with anodynes. You admit that mind influences the body somewhat, but you conclude that the stomach, blood, nerves, bones, etc. hold the preponderance of power. Controlled by this belief, you continue in the old routine. You lean on the inert and unintelligent, never discerning how this deprives you of the available superiority of divine mind. The body is not controlled scientifically by a negative mind. Mind is the grand creator, and there can be no power except that which is derived from mind. If mind was first chronologically, is first potentially, and must be first eternally, then give to mind the glory, honor, dominion, and power everlastingly due its holy name. Inferior and unspiritual methods of healing may try to make mind and drugs coalesce, but the two will not mingle scientifically. Why should we wish to make them do so, since no good can come of it? If mind is foremost and superior, let us rely upon mind, which needs no cooperation from lower powers, even if these so-called powers are real. Not is the squire when the king is nigh, withdraws the star when dawns the sun's brave light. The various mortal beliefs formulated in human philosophy, physiology, hygiene, are mainly predicated of matter, and afford faint gleams of God or truth. The more material a belief, the more obstinately tenacious its error. The stronger are the manifestations of the corporeal senses, the weaker the indications of soul. Human will power is not science. Human will belongs to the so-called material senses, and its use is to be condemned. Willing the sick to recover is not the metaphysical practice of Christian Science, but is sheer animal magnetism. Human will power may infringe the rights of man. It produces evil continually, and is not a factor in the realism of being. Truth and not corporeal will is the divine power which says to disease, peace, be still. Because divine science wars with so-called physical science, even as truth wars with error, the old schools still oppose it. Ignorance, pride, or prejudice closes the door to whatever is not stereotyped. When the science of being is universally understood, every man will be his own physician, and truth will be the universal panacea. It is a question today whether the ancient inspired healers understood the science of Christian healing, or whether they caught its sweet tones, as the natural musician catches the tones of harmony without being able to explain them. So divinely imbued were they with the spirit of science that the lack of the letter could not hinder their work, and that letter without the spirit would have made void their practice. The struggle for the recovery of invalids goes on, not between material methods, but between mortal minds and immortal mind. The victory will be on the patient's side only as immortal mind through Christ's truth subdues the human belief in disease. It matters not what material method one may adopt, whether faith in drugs, trust in hygiene, or reliance on some other minor curative. Scientific healing has this advantage over other methods, that in it truth controls error. From this fact arise its ethical as well as its physical effects. Indeed, its ethical and physical effects are indissolubly connected. If there is any mystery in Christian healing, it is the mystery which godliness always presents to the ungodly, the mystery always arising from ignorance of the laws of eternal and unerring mind. Other methods undertake to oppose error with error, and thus they increase the antagonism of one form of matter towards other forms of matter or error, and the warfare between spirit and the flesh goes on. By this antagonism, mortal mind must continually weaken its own assumed power. The theology of Christian Science includes healing the sick. Our Master's first article of faith propounded to his students was healing, and he proved his faith by his works. The ancient Christians were healers. Why has this element of Christianity been lost? Because our systems of religion are governed more or less by our systems of medicine. The first idolatry was faith in matter. The schools have rendered faith in drugs the fashion rather than faith in deity. By trusting matter to destroy its own discord, health and harmony have been sacrificed. Such systems are barren of the vitality of spiritual power, by which material sense is made the servant of science and religion becomes Christ-like. Material medicine substitutes drugs for the power of God, even the might of mind, to heal the body. Scholasticism clings for salvation to the person instead of to the divine principle of the man Jesus, and his science, the curative agent of God, is silenced. Why? Because truth divests material drugs of their imaginary power and clothes spirit with supremacy. Science is the stranger that is within thy gates, remembered not, even when its elevating effects practically prove its divine origin and efficacy. Divine science derives its sanction from the Bible, and the divine origin of science is demonstrated through the holy influence of truth in healing sickness and sin. This healing power of truth must have been far anterior to the period in which Jesus lived. It is as ancient as the Ancient of Days. It lives through all life and extends throughout all space. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Late in the 19th century, I demonstrated the divine rules of Christian Science. They were submitted to the broadest practical test, and everywhere, when honestly applied under circumstances where demonstration was humanly possible, the science showed that truth had lost none of its divine and healing efficacy, even though centuries had passed away since Jesus practiced these rules on the hills of Judea and in the valleys of Galilee. Although this volume contains the complete science of mind healing, never believe that you can absorb the whole meaning of the science by a simple perusal of this book. The book needs to be studied, and the demonstration of the rules of scientific healing will plant you firmly on the spiritual groundwork of Christian Science. This proof lifts you high above the perishing fossils of theories already antiquated and enables you to grasp the spiritual facts of being hitherto unattained and seemingly dim. Our Master healed the sick, practiced Christian healing, and taught the generalities of its divine principle to his students. But he left no definite rule for demonstrating this principle of healing and preventing disease. This rule remained to be discovered in Christian Science. A pure affection takes form in goodness, but science alone reveals the divine principle of goodness and demonstrates its rules. Jesus never spoke of disease as dangerous or as difficult to heal. When his students brought to him a case they had failed to heal, he said to them, "O faithless generation," implying that the requisite power to heal was in mind. He prescribed no drugs, urged no obedience to material laws, but acted in direct disobedience to them. Neither anatomy nor theology has ever described man as created by spirit, as God's man. The former explains the men of men, or the children of men, as created corporeally instead of spiritually, and as emerging from the lowest instead of from the highest conception of being. Both anatomy and theology define man as both physical and mental, and place mind at the mercy of matter for every function, formation, and manifestation. Anatomy takes up man at all points materially. It loses spirit, drops the true tone, and accepts the discord. Anatomy and theology reject the divine principle which produces harmonious man and deal the one wholly, the other primarily, with matter, calling that man, which is not the counterpart but the counterfeit of God's man. Then theology tries to explain how to make this man a Christian, how from this basis of division and discord to produce the concord and unity of spirit and his likeness. Physiology exalts matter, dethrones mind, and claims to rule man by material law instead of spiritual. When physiology fails to give health or life by this process, it ignores the divine spirit as unable or unwilling to render help in time of physical need. When mortals sin, this ruling of the schools leaves them to the guidance of a theology which admits God to be the healer of sin but not of sickness, although our great master demonstrated that truth could save from sickness as well as from sin. Mind as far outweighs drugs in the cure of disease as in the cure of sin. The more excellent way is divine science in every case. Is materia medica a science or a bundle of speculative human theories? The prescription which succeeds in one instance fails in another, and this is owing to the different mental states of the patient. These states are not comprehended, and they are left without explanation except in Christian science. The rule and its perfection of operation never vary in science. If you fail to succeed in any case, it is because you have not demonstrated the life of Christ, truth, more in your own life, because you have not obeyed the rule and proved the principle of divine science. A physician of the old school remarked with great gravity, "We know that mind affects the body somewhat, and advise our patients to be hopeful and cheerful, and to take as little medicine as possible. But mind can never cure organic difficulties. The logic is lame, and facts contradict it. The author has cured what is termed organic disease as readily as she has cured purely functional disease, and with no power but the divine mind. Since God, divine mind, governs all, not partially but supremely, predicting disease does not dignify therapeutics. Whatever guides thought spiritually benefits mind and body. We need to understand the affirmations of divine science, dismiss superstition, and demonstrate truth according to Christ. Today there is hardly a city, village, or hamlet in which are not to be found living witnesses and monuments to the virtue and power of truth as applied through this Christian system of healing disease. Today, the healing power of truth is widely demonstrated as an immanent eternal science instead of a phenomenal exhibition. Its appearing is the coming anew of the gospel of on earth peace, goodwill toward men. This coming, as was promised by the Master, is for its establishment as a permanent dispensation among men. But the mission of Christian science now, as in the time of its earlier demonstration, is not primarily one of physical healing. Now, as then, signs and wonders are wrought in the metaphysical healing of physical disease, but these signs are only to demonstrate its divine origin, to attest the reality of the higher mission of the Christ power to take away the sins of the world. The science so-called of physics would have one believe that both matter and mind are subject to disease, and that too, in spite of the individual's protest and contrary to the law of divine mind. This human view infringes man's free moral agency, and it is as evidently erroneous to the author, and will be to all others at some future day, as the practically rejected doctrine of the predestination of souls to damnation or salvation. The doctrine that man's harmony is governed by physical conditions all his earthly days, and that he is then thrust out of his own body by the operation of matter, even the doctrine of the superiority of matter over mind, is fading out.